Chapter 14, which is dressed in joy, but augurs ill. Sylvia, Adelphine's mother, had been in the kitchen when the guests arrived, but hurried out to greet them after Adelphine answered the door. She was animated with the excitement of the day's events, first Mahogany's arrival, then the Leone de la Piazza, and now the crowning jewel. Mahogany introduced Sylvia to the most elegant man she had ever seen.
"Buonasera," said the captain. "Mi lasci presentare. Sono il signore Don Capitano di Harvey, per servirla."
"Silvia Sanzio, piacere."
"Ah, Silvia," quoted Harvey, "rimembri ancora quel tempo della tua vita mortale, quando beltè splendea negli occhi ridenti i fuggitivi."
Footnote. Giacomo Leopardi from the poem Per Silvia, for Silvia.
"Do you still remember that time in your mortal life, when beauty shone in your laughing and fugitive eyes?"
Silvia is also the name of the heroine's friend in Two Gentlemen from Verona. At this point, the narrator breaks in.
"Oh, magic of magic, flight of flight, is there truer love than love at first sight between a middle-aged man and woman? This poet has never seen it, and you, gentle reader, will not see a greater gaze of affection in this true tale. It is an affection only possible after years of solitude, after the last spark of faith that beats in the ever-faithful heart is all but extinguished, after a true romantic has passed the years in vain, waiting for true love. No, dear reader, you will not find any more tender moment, a moment of youthful emotion enjoyed in the fullness of maturity, than you will find in this moment when Harvey, keeping his eyes fixed on Sylvia's, took her hand in his and raised its living warmth to his lips. Every joy Sylvia had ever lived was synthesized in a single moment. She felt she was the most beautiful woman in the world, and Harvey the most beautiful man, for the world had been reduced to two. When Adelphine spoke to Mahogany, Sylvia remembered her company and blushed, then excused herself to check on the pasta in the kitchen. She was bustling about while Adelphine served the aperitif. "Chin chin," Adelphine toasted and winked at Mahogany. Her mother rushed in and raised her glass. "Chin chin," she toasted and winked at Harvey. The company could not have been better matched. Sylvia was reflected in Harvey and Adelphine, and was in love with Mahogany's reflection in Harvey. Mahogany was reflected in Adelphine and Harvey, and in love with Sylvia's reflection in Adelphine. Adelphine was the genetic reflection of Harvey and Sylvia, and the spiritual reflection of Mahogany. And Harvey was the reflection and source of all the reflections in each of the others. As the evening wore on, no one was quite sure who they were in love with, or whether the entire group was just the happy splintering of a single personality joyfully dining alone. But a single personality could not have consumed the 4-hour parade of plates that issued from the kitchen. The meal began with a light soup and bread, followed by tortellini alla panna and the first bottle of Chianti. The guests alternated between drinking sparkling water and wine, and the conversation alternated between English and Italian. After the tortellini, there was a short pause, and then the main course, a succulent veal sorrento with spinach lettuce salad, was consumed with the second and third bottles of wine. Incredibly,
Though Mahogany spoke no Italian and Sylvia spoke no English, there was not a single lapse of communication. Just as the lines between personalities had been erased, so were the lines between cultures. In fact, words were the least important of the communicative tools. Hands, eyes, laughter, and facial expressions were more than enough. Any spoken attempt to describe what was shared in the flashing energy of eyes could only fall short. At one point, Mahogany leaned back and took a deep breath. He paused to watch the animated interaction of the other three and realized that the solitude and alienation of his life in San Diego seemed light years away. Two planets, two stars, two galaxies could not be more distant and different than this world and the one he had left behind. He knew he would never be happier. And he was right. The narrator breaks in. Creatures of a day, what is anyone? What is he not? Man is but a dream of a shadow. Yet when there comes as a gift of heaven a gleam of sunshine, there rests upon men a radiant light and, aye, a gentle life. When Mahogany returned to the conversation, Adelphine brought out a plate of fruit, and Sylvia followed her with four small bowls of water, each with a white carnation, in which the guests were to wash their fingers. Harvey's instinctive reaction was to swill the water and devour the blossom. But, under the influence of Sylvia, he elegantly wet his fingers and dried them on his napkin. There was another interlude after the fruit, and, before the pastries and sweetbreads were brought out, Adelphine filled the delicate spumanti glasses to the brim. "Chin chin," Mahogany toasted and winked at Adelphine. "Chin chin," Harvey toasted and winked at Sylvia. At midnight the meal was over, and in the interest of propriety, Adelphine arranged for Harvey and Mahogany to stay at a hotel within walking distance of the house. When they left, Sylvia made them promise to return the next day. The following morning, our heroes awoke with bliss in their hearts. After a vigorous shower, they went for a stroll through the market and spotted Sylvia doing her shopping. Mahogany learned that Adelphine was at her studio in the Academia, and he hurried off to find her. Harvey stayed behind with Sylvia, who was picking out a bunch of grapes. A drop of water beaded and slipped on the purple skin of the fruit and splashed in the street. "Can I help with the groceries?" said Harvey. "Of course," she smiled. Her neighbors would not object to a gentleman in her home at midday, she thought. When they reached the apartment, the dampness of the grapes had weakened the paper of the bag, and it tore open when Harvey placed it on the table. Overjoyed with their sudden freedom, the grapes leapt about the room. Sylvia laughed and kneeled to pick them up off the floor. "Don't worry," she said. "The floor is clean," and she plopped a grape into her mouth. The purple juice squirted and left a violet trace on her lips. She found another one and fed it to Harvey. His lips flared as well. Of course, one grape led to another, and soon they were sitting against the base of the cupboard, licking the juice off each other's lips. When the 11 o'clock sun streaked through the window, it found them making recklessly tender love on the kitchen floor. After several hours, they dressed and went out. In the street, they ran into Mahogany and Adelphine returning from the Accademia, and arranged to meet them later for the film in the Palazzo Ducale. The young couple continued on to the apartment, where they were stunned to find the floor covered with grapes. "What are these?" said Mahogany, bending over to pick one up. Adelphine kneeled to help him, and, well, one grape led to another, and soon they were sitting at the base of the cupboard, licking the juice off each other's lips. It was 8 o'clock when the four lovers met in the swarming courtyard behind the Palazzo Ducale. The town had come to see the first showing of the Roland XII's film, The Raven. Though the movie had been finished 4 years before, it had been censored by the authorities, who considered it a plagiarism of a variety of earlier works. When the ban was finally lifted, the Mantuan City Council decided to schedule an outdoor showing in honor of its heroine, the lovely Laura Antipas, a 29-year-old native of Mantua. Footnote. The surname Antipas dates back to Herod Antipas, A.D. 39, Tetrarch of Galilee and Pariah. Mr. Twelves, the author of the film, was world-renowned for his avant-garde techniques of erasing the line between fiction and reality, and the makeshift theater enabled the entire town to be present at the viewing. The courtyard was overflowing. Young couples and families bustled about on the ground, children hung from the trees, young men gathered on the stage, and the town's royalty sat in the balconies. Harvey's group, because of Adelphine's high artistic standing, was stationed only 4 rows from the stage that held the elevated screen on which the movie was to be shown. When the palace lights dimmed, a hush fell on the crowd. In truth, there was nothing even remotely remarkable about the film. It was the sentimental retelling of an age-old love story. Two impetuous youths fall in love, and their illusion is shattered when the heroine suddenly dies. Had this been all the evening offered, even the loyal Mantuans, who had come explicitly to see their lovely Filia in her starring role, would have been bored to tears. But, fortunately for all involved, and especially for Mr. Roland Twelves, Harvey, only minutes into the show, leapt up on the stage and began to participate in the film. The projector was positioned at such an angle that the shadow cast by the captain moved perfectly across the screen, while he himself remained hidden. Being on stage, Harvey was close enough to the microphones that were used to amplify the soundtrack, and his voice was heard as clearly as any of the actors. The crowd roared at the innovation, and the critics marveled at the genius of Mr. Twelves. He had created what no one had dreamed possible, audience participation cinema. Of course, Harvey was the true genius, for only he was capable of instantly comprehending and reacting to the screen characters in such a way as to enhance rather than destroy the film. His performance was brilliant, and after his third ovation, a rich Italian movie producer, so rich he had recently bought the government-owned castle at Portofino, approached him to discuss an acting contract. He invited Harvey and his friends to accompany him to the castle where they could discuss the contract at leisure. Harvey accepted, and though Sylvia was disappointed because her own obligations did not permit her to go, she was happy for the other three.